Nebula Mine moves ships from the harbor in Sydney and has recently had a son named Brian. And I've written this tiny book. A cheer for the child. I lift my old champagne glass full of whiskey and cheer for the child. Born in Sydney, Australia, to Owen and Kira. Will he see the next century? Will he die in Ireland? Will every other blessing attend him? Good cheer, my boy. Good cheer. That's my heart's hope. Thanks, Charles. Is Alec back? Alec Dufournay? There he is.
This part of the, I saw the poem last week, is the same collection as this one, and I thought that was weird, and I think it's pretty accurate, although you see it for yourself. You smile to me. Did she smile to me? Uh-huh. I cannot not smile. I cannot not kiss her. I drown against your lips. I die in your prejudice. I burn under your lips. Uh-huh. Let's go in the toilet, see how far it gets. I'm so happy we met. You ask nothing, I say yes. Drunk and protected sex. Well, I think so. Drunk and protected sex. Just pretend it's fine. Just pretend we like each other. Just pretend you like it. Just pretend we want it. Just pretend it's definitely worth it. I won't ask, you won't tell. Drunk and protected sex. Drunk and protected sex. However, whatever, we'll pay a tribute to our self-harm attitude and wish to disappear and wish not to talk about it and wish not to see me ever again and wish I'd be hard and wish we get wet and wish we got a buzz and wish we stop thinking about the string that squeezes our minds and wish we finally feel the suffocating emptiness that makes us beg for a smile and wish for great drunk and protected sex, drunk and protected sex, drunk and protected. Thank you.
Next, can we have Billy Randall?
I got the inspiration that I might read this out from Carmel's Yehudi Menuhin poem. What I love. And this is something I'm just working on at the moment. It's called The Tailor. The tailor is in the old day. Maker of suits. When you put my furious suit on, son, you wear treads requisitioned from twilight, cut subtly from the very pelt of evening. Ha! No lamb on a shivering hillside ever wore the stuff of my lupine duds. Bespoke and light-devouring, my jacket's gilt spine, with precision stitches that punch through the breeding and intangible pattern of that cloth, but supple. Think of quivering figures on a gypsy's tipsy violin, or a second epidermis, one that stands proud, or hangs with its wearer's weight deposited just so. Check this livid interior, these folds and vents. Here, put your finger to its pinstripes. They burn, veins of tawny, smoldering bourbon. When you put my furious suit on, son, it'll float you like a solo up the Ramblas, unmolested through the old town's currents, the intoxicated dagger-bearing quarters, as if you imbibed fire, a vial of hell itself, or Miles Davis's blood and heroin, or is the stimulant even headier that unbuttons the nighttime, that stands the doorman down, when it struts you toward each chrome exclusionary boozer, that assembles all the little red party dresses, that renders every silk rope discotheque, every harbor or backstage after party, every model's crotch accessible. I'll stop there.
Okay. Can we have Judo Leo, please?
mustard knit and sunglasses. Benches on boardwalks and a venti soy caramel latte to go. Mustardness and sunglasses. Benches on boardwalks and a venti soy caramel latte to go. Ugly grey faces, painted brown, beige, yellow, pink, and smeared with red and gold. Ugly grey faces. Patterned fools with fanciful coloured gold. Amber Cuttings, Richard Lloyd and Sons away somewhere. Amber bubbles, toil and trouble, aid disgrace and foul hair. Goji beats and Dr. Dre, loiter, shout and piss away some more hours. Blistered songs and shitty skins still smell sweeter than their flowers.
Can we have Michael Barrett, please?
Some limericks, two food limericks. You can't beat a dish of roast lamb. Some say it's superior to ham. With croquettes on the side, it's loved far and wide. For vegans, we don't give a damn. Roast beef, of dishes the king, of you great poets do sing. Served with gravy and mash, you cut quite a dash. Now bring on the Yorkshire pudding. On the beach, with love in mind, I wanted to place just one kiss on the lips of that cute little miss. I dreamt of incitement to a state of excitement in order to reach perfect bliss. I dreamt I was on a white ship and I went for a dip in the nip. A young lady I spied who swam with the tide and soon we were joined at the hip. I feel like I'm walking on air. I'm wondering if I might dare to remove the bikini, it's so teeny weeny, you won't even know it's not there. Your shapely figure intrigues me, and your body's geography. Your curves are aesthetic, I find them magnetic, I adore your biology.
Can we have Mary O'Connell, please? Yeah.
Just a bit of whimsy. Spot the cliches. It's called "It's Hard to Be in Labour." At this moment in time, Jeremy Corbyn has found a window of opportunity for a level playing pitch after his landslide victory. He'll double check that Cameron won't move the goalposts or that Nicola Sturgeon won't come from left field and throw him a curved ball. He'll want his party colleagues to use some joined up thinking, make sure that the trade unions sing from the same hymn sheet and are on the same page. This will involve thinking outside the box.
Thanks, Mary. Can we have Shane one, please?
So yes, I'm going to continue on with the lighthearted and whimsical poetry. Often my stuff is quite dark and personal deep, but I'm actually hilarious when you forget to know me. That's a pun. Oh, sorry, I've been on it all night. So this one is sort of an ode, though I'm not actually sure what an ode is, to the guys who sell the Evening Echo. So Sherlock, we give it a go, will we? We do the awful accent as well, and it's got terrible rhymes. So Sherlock, you know, for a good one. Evening Echo. There's a fella by the GPO, and another on Patrick Street. They're sometimes seen on Grand Parade, which is rare you wouldn't meet. You're competing with the buskers, the juggler, and your man what does the karaoke around about 1 a.m. They're an awful sight to see with their jackets large and puffing. Sure you'd need it with the temperature as a half centigrade and nothing. And have you seen the state of the poor fellow's shoes? Sure they're falling off the feet. What are you at, lads? Your mammy's ashamed. You go to Clark's or something, boy? And they're a fine sight all the same with their papers on their arm. You have to work at something, sure they're doing no one harm. They've only 3 papers left, they haven't long to go. Just a few more bobbins off they hop, shouting the Evening Echo.
Okay. Can we have Patricia Walsh, please?
Sorry. This is a poem I've created for the event in it. It's called Equinox. Day and night both suck in equal measure, leveling the field for season that's in it. Things get worse from now on, putting evening's fight starting darkness in mind. Vanished from the record, only a gravestone marks the demise. Fattened desire, decaying flowers on a grave of choices. Closing time on devotion now a necessity. Working against willpower, energy levels explode as a result. Excuses fall away. The creeping darkness might be out of favour. To me, over-relaxed, God knowing my intentions. Hungry for unsolicited favours, a routine adhered to, processing faith by works, regards abounding, press feeding shovels before the day is out, seeing drinks in darkness, glorious sight. Epic or lyric, the relevant argument, uncovered on night, speaks of volumes. Words in debate, unlubricated by drink, falls away in the morning sun, a heat wave predicted. Again, as is wont. Wit hangs in the balance. Equal day and night is only the start of a dreaded season, a cold contraption, sleeping through water, fit a catastrophe. Thank you.
That's Patricia. Can we have Max Creedon, please?
Let's go
first section.
Anybody else have?
Oh.
We should have
a couple of long hours there killed in waiting rooms and passing time. I did a lot of sketching, and sometimes I can't find an image arrests me a little bit. So this face arrested me with these glasses, and the sunglasses, there's always reflections in the sunglasses. So I started to draw a series of this particular individual. And then I sort of drew in the dots when I came on with this poem. Oh no, I think I'll skip it, lads, because I want to hold up the show.
You weren't. Well, Mike.
Right, I should lose. It's not quite to age, I think. So I just was writing this poem about this guy and the different images he had, and his glasses, and the world was reflected in his glasses in different ways. And it really was a feeling of that we're on the habitat. So, lift a world from hands to eyes, steal one iris kiss of sun, blend within your camouflage and drink it up and sense it through. Cast away all nice necrosis and shed those scales of retinal fibrosis. We've climbed up high and stretched so far from our primordial gelatinous goo. Tempt and glamorize your soul, sink in velvet and suck it in. Eat dressed up plates or shiny plates, whichever fancy tickles you. In raccoon hat or in top hats, whichever shield will work for you. and seamless moves through habitats, your street life, your wildlife, your cast-off shoes. In the one you lose one too many, and in the wilderness seek one of few.
Can we have Ray Hanran?
This is going to be short and sweet. It's called Girl on the Bus. She is young, very young. She looks attentive, she looks intent. Her eyes are brown pools of concentration. She is young, she is learning for her first time. So too am I, so too am I.
Thanks, Ray. Can we have Philip Splann, please?
I got a bit of a story today. So, Socrates was one of the most greatest philosophers, often lauded for his wisdom. One day, a philosopher came across one of his acquaintances, who went up to him and said, "Socrates, you know, I just heard about one of your students." "Wait a moment," Socrates replied. "Before you tell me, I'd like you to pass a little test. It's called the test of tree." "The test of tree?" "That's correct," said Socrates. "Before you talk and let me know what my student has just done, we first have to put what you're going to tell me through a little test. First is the test of truth. Is what you're going to tell me any bit true at all?" "No," the man just replied. "In fact, I just heard it." "All right," says Socrates. "So, you don't really know what you're going to tell me is true, but you might pass the second test, the test of goodness. Is what you're going to tell me good?" "No, on the contrary." "So," says Socrates, "you want to tell me something bad about my student, but you're not sure it's true?" The man shrugged, a little embarrassed. So Socrates continued, "You might pass the third test, the final test and the most important test of all, the test of usefulness. Is what you're going to tell me useful to me?" "No, not really." "So," says Socrates, "what you want to tell me is neither true, no good, nor even useful. So why are you telling me this story?" Thank you very much.
Thank you. Can we have Sean Bent, please?
I was let go from my job about 2.5 weeks ago, and I wrote this about a week and a half ago, kind of as a reaction to all of that. It's called The Question. I lost my job today, and so began the first questions on a page. Name, address, PPS number, and the rest of your incomes and savings. And then the clerk asked me questions. What is the nature of your claim? Job seeker's allowance or benefit? Let's find out. Did you leave your job voluntarily? No, I was asked to leave. I was a good worker, but for my latenesses. But before that, I decided, you know, it wasn't me. And I daydreamed of things that could be. In another time, another place, with another purpose, doing something worth believing in. Yeah, but did you tell them you would not be returning to work? There is no need. They made it clear I wasn't. And I looked at her, wondering if she saw me as a person, or as a scrounger, squabbling for a piece of everyone else's pie. And then I decided, look, she's probably seen a lot of life here, quite possibly numb to at least some tear-soaked eyes. Or else my mind is just projecting. I don't know why she's here, or what she thinks of me, and everyone else on the social welfare line, or hoping to sign on. But I'm beginning to see questions in everyone's eyes, saying, what do you do, and why? Well, right now, I'm waiting for the dough. I didn't quit my job, so I should qualify for some help. See, I'm one of the lucky ones. Voluntarily leaving a job can mean 9 weeks without access to welfare. And I've been there before and seen it in others. Chronic unemployment without access to money is a black hole of impossible gravity. It feels like you can never escape, and the light is sucked into, and you know that there's these great beautiful planets and stars out there, but you can't see them. And you try to reach out, but you can't feel them. And soon, you almost start to forget that they're there, or that there was ever anything more to life than this. And you're stuck in an in-between of being unable to find a job and having only barely enough money to survive. And all of life looks like an expression of luxury and art. And you look at yourself and you find that you're not a part of it. You don't fit in here, in this society anymore. You're a fly people would love to smush because it seems like everyone in the papers or the radio says you're scum. But still, I have to share the same spaces with the same people of my life, and I meet them and they ask the question, how's the job going? It's not. Or sometimes if I'm too afraid to say the truth, I'll say, oh, it's grand, you know, it's hard going, but sure, you know yourself. And swiftly change the topic. And the ones who do know ask, so what are you doing now? I'm trying not to panic, not to acknowledge the fact that I could be at risk of losing the house, that ending this great spate of change began when I first found this job. But I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about me. How's your family? How's the dog? But still the question comes from strangers, acquaintances, what do you do? Fine, you want to know the truth. I write poems no one will read, songs that no one hears, and I stare for hours at computer screens trying to find the answer to your question. I'm spending my spare time puffing up to impress anyone with lofty words, desperately hoping to be seen as more than I am. But what will you do in the future? I don't know. I'd like to somehow make the world less hateful with less poverty by writing a poem. And, ooh, making websites and using my knowledge of computer networking to run mail transfer protocol servers that somehow by sending mails from computer to computer destroy white heteronormative patriarchy. And kill the 1% and give every refugee a home and transform the entire landscape of media communications. But that's what I'd like to do, yeah. But it doesn't answer your first question. What do you do? Stop asking me that. It doesn't matter what I do. I'm going through a rough patch right now, and it's natural. I'm doing what I need to do, and I'll keep doing it. I'm me doing Sean things. And looking for a new job, I'm not just what I do in a job. I am me, and that's enough for me. And I don't care if that's enough for you.
Thank you.
After all her black coffee kisses, my lips are in the tips of my toes. I'm on the edge of a shimmering lake, testing the temperature of the water. It's cold. Debenham's dresses are strewn across reed beds, fluttering slightly in the breeze, 20% off, label still attached. This is the nothing, the blank before craving. A football I lost in the 90s is washed ashore. I pick it up and take a few solos, clumsy in my bare feet. If words have meaning, what is the meaning before words? I rotate my cup in its saucer, put down my pen and stare at the shop fronts. A willow sways on the shore.
Thanks, Ben. We have Tony O'Shea, please.
This day last week, we buried one of us, Taj. Taj Walan. I was a friend of his from when we were teenagers. It sort of got over my head, to be honest with you. I can hardly believe it. But I wrote this poem for him anyway. It's called For Taj. My beautiful friend, you have gone to the light. Your smile, kind spirit, and twinkly eyes. You had that delicacy that makes us human. That same delicacy that took you from our sight. Searching for words that I just can't find to convey the beauty that all your friends loved. To me, you had it all attached. But invisible troubles crowded your mind. Certain things will never make sense. Losing you, my friend, is one of them. In your honor, I will live, love, and try to write poems, like all the rest of us here, in this present tense.
Oh,
thank you.
Thanks, Tony. Can we have Michael Ray, please?
Shadow, finding the right shapes to stop the seeds of meadow flowers from gestating in my garden. Hands behind head, grass imprinting the backs of my arms, I watch a cloud gesture above the strong stone curve. And you arrive, like a bird might light on a spade, palms cupping your chin. Elbows diminishing the wall's height. Too long ago to remember their colour, but even in sun, your eyes are still sleepless nights. I'd always thought of you as someone gone to a quiet future, living in a downtown apartment with long-haired dogs. Your curtained bedroom like our teetering acropolis of paperbacks. And in this moment, I return to happy student poverty, your tiny waist, the ever-changing colour of your hair, and the day you told me you were late.
Can we have more Jacobs, please?
I'm going to do a sound text with a soundscape, and it's about something that we all have, 60% water. It's like a little machine functioning independently. We know very little about it, yet we're stuck with it. You can fly away like a bird, but you always have to come back to roost. I'm talking about the body. This text is partly based on a dream, and it's called The Empty Lake. There is a cavity inside my diaphragm, underneath my diaphragm, that separates the thorax from the abdomen and is composed of two muscles. Formerly my mother's territory. It is a densely populated anatomical landscape. Liver, gallbladder, pancreas, spleen, the large and small intestines, uterus, kidneys and stomach, all tightly packed and artificially divided into 9 different regions. Somewhere down there, a vacuum exists. A vast grey lake filled with an obscure substance, gaseous or maybe a liquid, dotted with the silhouettes of reeds. It is twilight, misty, trapped in the clammy, chilly instant before daybreak. A day that takes forever to arrive. This is where, long after he died, I met my father, bobbing up and down in a small boat without oars. As he muttered, vaguely, about Rainer Maria Rilke, the German poet, born in 1875, the only child of an unhappy marriage, who produced, among others, elegies and sonnets during a savage, creative firestorm, a hurricane of the spirit that wiped away all the cobwebs of a writer's block brought on by depression. All angels are terrible, he wrote. Or should that be? Terrifying, awesome, a terror, horrendous. So much is lost in translation, whereas other things are gained.
Yes, so Paul said a very moving tribute to Taj last week. It didn't quite relate the face to the name, but in the Dwarf the following day, there was a picture of him up in the Kiko op, of where he was a very much loved customer for a long time. And one of the most kind kind spirited people I've ever come across. And just trying to give this moment to him. That was a big support of me, I really appreciated that. It's called a survey of substance. When your mind it don't dance in beat anymore, and rhythm only makes sense to the heart, does your bestowed vague sense of an end give thanks to a purposeful start? Does judgment of you as a whole represent each constituent part? How far the reflection of light in your eyes? How well do you see in the dark? How dense the mist of your honor? How rooted ideals to the ground? When a heart cries or laughter breaks, how different to you comes the sound? What value have you for your spirit? How worthy your flesh by the pound? How do your eyes smile on the places you've seen? How vast the terrain left unfound?
We have Samuel Anderson, please. Very pushed for time, so I'll just do one short one. This is called Dusk. As I drove, I caught a glimpse of a perfect fire orange semicircle beneath the clouds, as if a scalpel sliced a soul in two. Despite craning within the confines of the car, I caught no further glimpse. As clouds, pregnant with rain, gathered to rinse the sweat of summer days from the night. Thank you. Okay, our last report tonight is Robin Rollins.
Something from the Irish book, and then I thought, I've had two glasses of wine, and there are loads of young men here, and I have a book about Gallipoli, and in the book there's a poem about the Irish, and this book is bilingual, Turkish and English, and it's written so that if you were Turkish or if you were English speaker, you could experience the poems in the same way. But this one is particularly for the Irish. And I live in Connemara, so it has references to Connemara. And also, I'll just tell you about the River Clyde, which was a ship that was sent like a Trojan horse into Gallipoli, and in its belly it had 2,000 Irish soldiers, really. But as you know, they were fighting for the British Army at that time, and when they came home, no one really wanted to know about them. Green Road. This is the way that we went to get there, past locks in early dawn, reeds so still they were painted in. Green shamrocks we'd sewn into our jacket sleeves, never to match those shimmering connacht fields clotted white with sheep, but travelling with us anyway. And out of Dublin's grey light we came, out of the poor, the cold, always hungry, and now to be fed by our work. And out of Trinity, the future of a new nation, they would know us then, our imperial overseers, know our worth in battle,
pay the value in our freedom after. That is honor. That is why we came. The fife band of the Irish Fusiliers played the Wearing of the Green as we sailed out to war from Devonport, those of us coast-born knowing the fear of a rough sea and the want of swimming in it. We had thought to save poor wee Catholic Belgium. We knew it wasn't France when they shaved our heads for the heat, lads running anyways to avoid it. We'd heard from the Irish gone before Gallipoli was hell, but when they landed us under sheer cliffs and no artillery, it didn't make sense. We waited too long, in heat I've never known, shears your skin off, peeling it back, sunburn, red raw. Water now, I knew about water and rain. I lived on land that was watery earth, it never went dry. But I never knew how precious it really is, how alive it brings you, how strong it makes you, and what it can do to you going without. Slit lips, mouth full of pebbles for the wet, stumbling about so mad for it, you don't care if anyone can shoot you. Honest men make thieves, liars, some gone so crazy they might kill for it. Wild flowering plants all over those hills, there must have been clear springs somewhere if anyone had had a map. This is the way we went, and nothing more to know. Jumping from lighters and drowning, the chuck of bayonet up the guts, or hailed into with lead, riddled, such a true word. Say it fast many times. Riddle, riddle, riddle. That's it. General Sir Brian Mahan, a Galway man, had a tantrum when he didn't get promoted, resigned and headed off to an island, leaving his men under fire and no one game to pull us back without command. The fife band was swallowed by Suvla, one great bite. Most of us were dead in the many ways of war. Most of us wearing the green never got back. This is the way we left in early dawn, past the broken wire, small heap of charred khaki, wounded burned to death by gorse fires, bodies heaped so you couldn't tell what country they were from. Scattered about, half buried, the smell of crushed time, never to leave the company of blood, of cinders. We sailed over the ones that never made it to land, never fired a gun or saw the carnage drowning out of the River Clyde. They were from my home place, and I left them there in those razor ravines too far from Irish earth. I shake out of rage now as I did then, frustrated, throwing stones when grenades were gone. All I want to do is drink water, drink and drink, drown in it, drink anything. Will I pay that honour price now, do you think? Will I have my own country when I get back to it? The Turks have theirs.
I think we have 425 of ales.